This is the School Success Podcast, a podcast for school leaders to learn from other school leaders what's working and what's not, and to get inspiration and encouragement, as well as strategies to grow school enrollment, connect with families, retain teachers, recruit teachers, and everything in between. You guys are heroes, and I cannot thank you enough for pouring into this next generation that's coming behind us. My goal is you will take at least one thing away from every episode that you can take back to your school to make it better than it is right now. Please enjoy the School Success Podcast. Hey, school success makers, welcome to another edition of the School Success Podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell Slater. I'm joined by some new friends out of the great state of Arizona. We got Brooke, we got Eli, we got John, Paul, and they are all part of Chandler Prep over there in Arizona. And guys, I had some calls with them beforehand. They're doing some really cool things in Arizona. And Arizona is a hot market, as most people know, for people moving in from different states. And they are finding some schools, and it is competitive. So we're going to have some fun conversations today all about schools. And so I'm going to dive in first with passing it off for introductions. And then I have a question to start off the podcast. So let's start with Eli for introductions. And you can pass it off to your friends when you're done.
Great. I'm Eli Ferbersche. I am the assistant headmaster of the middle school here at Chandler Preparatory Academy. And I know usually folks just give a little background to introduce themselves here. So I'm originally from rural southeastern Ohio, a little Quaker community there. I went to St. John's College in Annapolis, Maryland, and did the Great Books program there. After I graduated, I moved to the great state of Alaska for 2 years, where I taught in private schools, one Christian school, and then another classic school, the Athenaeum Classic School in Anchorage. From there, I was contracted out to the Iditarod School District for a semester. And then that's where I got my calling to teach. I thought I should do this for the rest of my life, go back to Ohio, where I'm from, get my master's in education at Franciscan University. From there, I got a Fulbright scholarship, and I taught in Romania in the American Studies Department in Transylvania University for a year. And then from there, I got recruited here to Chandler Prep in 2013. At that time, I thought my wife and I were like, oh, we'll be here for 2 or 3 years, maybe 4. It's been a decade. So, I mean, this school is that amazing that I just can't bring myself to leave this team. And so here I am and happy to be here.
I love it.
Brooke.
Hi there. I'm Brooke Stevens. It's my 21st year in education overall. For 18 years, I was a choir director. And so I came to Chandler Prep partly because of the fine arts here that we do in the choir program. And so then 3 years ago, I got into administration, and I am the assistant headmaster of the high school here at Chandler Prep. And so I am just so happy to be part of this leadership team. It's just been a delight to be leading our students and helping serve families and just make the hiring and the staff as good as we can at Chandler Prep. And I still get to be walking through the school and hearing the great music that the choirs put on, and helping out with that program as well when I can. So I love the new role as assistant head, and Eli and I and John Paul are working together in all the ways that we can to make the school continue going forward.
Love it.
I'm John Paul Poppleton. I'm originally from Los Angeles. And then the short version is I taught in Mexico for what was supposed to be 6 months, and I fell in love with teaching, and I stayed there for 3 years. And then after that, coming back to the States, I worked for a Great Heart School in Glendale Prep, taught there for a while, became assistant headmaster, then was parachute dropped into Chandler, and I fell in love with the school. And I think it's a very, very special place. We've got a special community. We've got quite the project on our hands. And I think that's part of the bond we have, you know, working with Eli and Brooke. I think we're those daily challenges cause us to form a pretty cool bond. And the hope is that core, that leadership core kind of expands and the culture kind of comes from that. So this is my 15th year in education, 15th full year. There's some things sprinkled in before that, but yeah, thanks for having us on.
Good deal, guys. Well, I love it. Well, all the listeners out there, this is the first time we've had multiple guests on at one time. So I love switching it up and trying something new. So we have them, they're all obviously in the same school, but we, those that are just listening, we got Eli and Brooke in one room, and then we got John Paul in another room in the school. So it's pretty cool. So I'm liking this setup. We'll see how the fielded questions go, but I always start with the same question for everybody. And it's, if I was to come visit you guys in Chandler, Arizona, what would you say, Mitchell, you got to eat this and do this. What do I got to do to experience the full Chandler experience?
All right. First thing I would say is don't ever come here in July. this is some kind of aesthetical experience you're looking for. And then, but that being said, I think there are really three things that you can do. I would say there's arts, there's athletics, and there's outdoors. So maybe when it comes to the athletics, John Paul, do you want to tell a little bit about the Diamondbacks?
I mean, I am actually coming from Los Angeles. I was a Dodger fan, but I went to a lot of games when I first came here, and I really got moved by some of the heart that the D-backs had. I felt like it was pretty easy to root against them in the sea of Dodger blue in their home field, and I thought they were really competitive, et cetera. So I'm a fan of the Diamondbacks. I know Arizona sports are kind of feast or famine. I think that could be a whole podcast in and of itself. I think coming out here for obviously spring training for baseball, we get a lot of, the Fiesta Bowls out here. Sports are something people come to do here while the rest of the United States gets cold and we become more normal temperature. So I would say Chandler's amazing. Downtown Chandler's amazing. We've got a number of great restaurants and coffee shops. It's got a really good vibe. I think it's really great. I would say if you came out to Arizona, I would go to Pizzeria Bianco. I would go to their downtown original restaurant, and Netflix has a documentary on it. It's world class. I think it's worth the 3-hour wait. People don't realize that. They're like, 3 hours, I wouldn't do that, but I would, and I'd recommend it. So I'd say Pizzeria Bianco is a great way to get to know the 48th state.
All right. Anything else, Brooke? You got anything?
Sure. Just the art scene is amazing here as well. We have some local centers of the arts, Chandler Center for the Arts and Mesa Center for the Arts. And in fact, in Mesa right now, Southwest Shakespeare is performing right now Macbeth, and they're doing it over 3 weekends. And our drama teacher actually has a role of Macduff in the show. And so anyway, a bunch of students of ours and families are going out to the art scene as well quite often. We have First Friday in downtown Phoenix that draws a big arts crowd. Lots of choirs around and orchestras, and there's a lot to do for kind of anyone if you come to the Phoenix Chandler area for sure.
Yeah. And then I don't think you can come to Arizona, especially if you come in when Alaska is under 6 feet of snow and it's beautiful here. The outdoors are really amazing here. You know, that's why I moved to Alaska originally. And so I've been really glad living in Arizona to be able to experience the mountains and the deserts here. So if you go hiking at Lost Dutchman National Park, is beautiful. The Superstition Wilderness area is just outside the city limits, outside of Mesa. And I mean, you can backpack out there for days, and it's gorgeous. And if you want the urban hiking scene, is Camelback Mountain is sort of right in the middle of Phoenix and is a great mountain to hike up, and you just kind of get this amazing sort of cityscape view from there. But if you want to go see nothing, all you have to do is drive half an hour and you are in the middle of nowhere. And for food, I can't believe John Paul didn't mention Tacos Chihuas, which I think
good point.
Which I think he doesn't, but Tacos Chihuas and Mi Casita Taqueria, two of my favorite Mexican places here. And then if you want to clear your sinuses, go to Los Dos Molinos. It's a New Mexican style restaurant here. It'll if you have a cold, it'll burn it right out. So if you want an instant cure for the common cold, that's it.
Love it. Well, I see I got a list of all the places I got to visit. I've been to Arizona a couple times. I do love Arizona. It is beautiful. I have friends that live in Queen Creek, so we've visited them a couple years ago, and I remember coming into Arizona. I was like, okay, this is awesome. It like looks really cool, like desert and all that. But I will say after a week or two, I was like, I miss green. I really want to see green. It was just weird seeing it over and over again. So, which I know Arizona has that. It's just you have to go up and get to the snowy areas. But you guys live in a beautiful state. And obviously you have authentic Mexican food too, which I absolutely love. Hey, School Success Makers, just a really quick break from the episode to highlight our amazing sponsors over at America's Christian Credit Union. They are celebrating 65 years of service this year, and they provide essential school banking services and a tuition financing program for schools looking to reduce their risk and administrative burden. And you guys can find out all about them on their website, americaschristiancu.com/schools. That's americaschristiancu.com/schools. They are amazing over there, and I always like to say, if you're a school that collects tuition and you have a hard time collecting all of tuition at the end of the year, maybe it comes around May, June, you're like, man, we only got collected 95 or 98% of what tuition was owed to our school. One of the things you can do is have your parents get a tuition financing loan through the credit union, and then they pay the credit union directly and you get your funds up front at the beginning of the year as the school. So you don't have to chase people throughout the year and you can focus on what you do best, and that is loving and educating your students. And it doesn't cost your school anything to do it. So check them out online, americaschristiancu.com/schools. All right, back to the show. All right, well, diving in, guys, content wise for the podcast, obviously we talk all about school success that's on here, and that can go from, you know, people having some challenges, things that are going really good. We always start with the challenges side of things. So I'd love to just hear, like, what are some of those challenges that you guys specifically at Chandler Prep have right now, but not just here's all our challenges, but like, what are you doing to combat some of those challenges? Love to hear what you guys have, your thoughts are on those.
So I think the first challenge that we're combating right now is competition from other schools. We are in a very, very competitive state, like you said at the beginning of the podcast. We have several, and not only are we in a competitive state, but we're in a highly competitive area. Chandler has several very, very, very high performing charter schools, and we are one of them. I think some of the consequences for that for us is that, we have a kind of an over enrolled middle school right now and an under enrolled, high school. And we really want to retain more of those middle school students on my side of things into the high school. So I wanted to just toss it to Brooke for a second to talk about some of the things that we're working on to really work on retaining our middle school students into high school so that they don't leave to all the other many choices that are around us.
Yeah, that's right. The way I've heard it said is, hands down, we're the best game in town when it comes to middle school. People like the uniforms, they like the culture, they like smaller class sizes. And then when you get to high school, it just seems like it broadens out, and there might maybe more niche schools here and there for everybody. And so really trying to make our value as good as we know that it is, and getting that word out there that the 6 through 12, and even if I might say K through 12 curriculum, is the way that it makes the most sense. What we're doing with classical ed, you really want to see it through to that finish line of that 12th grade year, where things have cycled back now, and the critical thinking and the class dynamics and how the flow of the scope and sequence is thought out through all 7 years of study at the prep level that we have. So for students to cut it off at the pass and they leave after eighth grade, they haven't really explored the beauty of one of our best classes, which is Humane Letters, right? Which is a 2-hour block class. It's the humanities combining the history with philosophy, with literature, with writing, ELA. All of that is built into a block class. And what the teachers can do in that class is just beautiful. What the students learn how to do in discussion and how they learn how to read. And I guess what I would say to shore up the point is that when students and parents can see what we offer and they know what it is, I think it's something that they do want to try out. But because of our curriculum, we don't have electives in every single grade. You know, senior year there are elective choices, but the curriculum in high school, I think we just need to do more to get it out there.
Yeah, to speak into that a little bit, this is where we are really, I think, working on our marketing more, because parents will often choose our elementary and middle school By word of mouth, a lot of times in the various communities that we have here, they hear, oh, Chandler Prep is a really great school. The culture is good. The academics are high. The teachers are excellent. We have got, what was it, niche.com, John Paul, where that we had the best teachers in Arizona.
Yeah, well, we were third in Arizona, but definitely the best teachers in the immediate area.
Our teachers are excellent. And so they come through the middle school, but they don't know what classical education is, right? Like, so these parents are coming in. They don't know, I'm not even sure that why we're reading what, Plato? You're reading Homer? You learn Greek? You read, and then freshman geometry, we don't do like a public school geometry thing with algebra with shapes. They read Euclid's Elements of Geometry. You know, the ancient Greek math books. So we have to make the case to parents while they're still in our middle school, what classical education is and why they should choose that over all the many plethora of choices that they have around us. Because one of the things that that is a challenge, but is something that I love about our school is that we have an all required liberal arts program. Students have to take 4 years of humane letters. Everybody has to read Plato. Everybody has to read Dostoevsky. Everybody has to read de Tocqueville. Everybody has to read Descartes. And then everybody has to do calculus one. You know, you may not think you're good at math, but we think everybody is capable of accessing calculus. And that's like an audacious thing to say. I mean, and we think everybody should do fine arts. Fine arts are not an elective here. Every single year at Chandler Prep, they have to do a fine art and they cannot opt out of it to have a study hall, right? So sometimes parents want to go somewhere else because they want more choice. They want, oh, I just want to do STEM. So I'm going to send my kid to a STEM school. Or I just want, my kid's artsy. They're not good at math. So we're going to send them to Arizona School for the Arts or something like this, where they can do more drama. And as a liberal arts school, we demand that all of our students have a well-rounded education. And I think what that prepares them to do is to not be afraid of anything. So that when they go to college, like, they're not afraid of college algebra or college calculus or whatever course they're required to take that maybe most students want to opt out of. And we have had a track record of getting students through college more quickly than our competitors. And that's something I think that goes to show the power of a liberal arts education. I don't know if John Paul.
Real quick on that one, Eli, is there a disconnect between, I guess two questions for this. Is the middle school and high school separate buildings? Yeah. And then is there a disconnect from you're obviously you're lower in high school. So are people, is it too much for them? Are you seeing it's almost too much? Like, not in a bad way. Yeah. They're oh my goodness, there's so many things that school requires that I don't think we should be requiring this because this is not what I was brought up as. And is there kind of like a clash on family culture versus your school culture? Yes. And that's the reason they're leaving. What, do you have more reason behind that?
Yeah, well, that's good. We are not separate buildings. So we're on separate sides of the building, right? So middle school's on one side, high school's largely on the other. To address that point, actually, is our Titan House system is another way in which we're working to retain more students. Jump, I don't know if you want to say something about that. I'll get to the second bit of your question in a second here, Mr. Slater, but about family culture and stuff. But I did want to say something about the Titan houses and that trying to be sure that we don't run two separate schools, right? Because Mr. Poppleton is the headmaster of both. And then I essentially handle all of the daily operations and day-to-day of the middle school. Mrs. Stevens handles all of the day-to-day and daily operations of the high school. But we really, this is why our leadership team is so powerful, because we operate, the three of us, as one school. But it's a big, we have over 700 students here, 6 through 12. So, Mr. Poppleton, can you say something about Titan houses and making us one school retention?
Sure. I think the tension between the schools is real. One thing we haven't really talked much about is there's a K-5 on this campus too. So it's really, as Brooke said, K-12. experience here. And that's one thing. Thankfully, we do retain a lot of our students here, but we always want to retain more, especially, you know, students that we know are going to thrive here. There's a variety of reasons why they would, you know, want to go do something else at another school, but we want to see them get through that finish line to finish that great work. And there is a tension between family culture and school culture that we're constantly trying to stand in the gap for. We really try to serve our families. We partner with them, which means we communicate regularly. And we try to set up a really good relationship with them. Even though we are, you know, 700, I think that's kind of a medium-sized school. The world of charter, you know, it's probably a little bigger, at least with a lot of the schools we see here. But that we're still in a position where every kid is known. So especially when kids are going off to high school, you know, at least we can know who each kid is. Every kid's going to, you know, someone's going to greet them every day. Someone's going to look out for them. Someone's going to see if they're in a bad mood and say, hey, are you okay? Like, that's one of the big things we can offer here when some students are choosing because of athletics or maybe electives to go to a school with over 2,000 enrollment. So there is that tension there. One thing we do that really I think is part of our secret sauce but can be hard to taste at first for some families is we ask more of our students. So to graduate from our academy, they're going to be taking more hours of class. That, of course, equips them for college. But when some of the senior years at neighboring schools, kids are putting it in neutral, maybe going to a couple of classes, and then there might be at the food court at the mall. Literally, I go to the bookstore there sometimes to pick up a book, and I'll see kids out of school. And I remember, oh, wait a minute, they're seniors, and they don't need to be there all day. Anyway, so we actually require that they take a very robust core. It's challenging. And sometimes, you know, that could be tough for kids. Kids know how much we require. One of the challenges, you know, just because I do want to bring it up alongside, you know, keeping kids through that K through 12 experience out here, is really student growth. One area where we have been able to shine in the last 2 years, and then a couple of years, you know, COVID obviously changed everything, but is student growth for all students, for students who are lower in proficiency in certain standardized tests, and then students who are in the middle and high. So that's one area that's a constant challenge because it's a moving target. And we've had a growing Title I population here at Chandler Prep. So in some ways, that's a strength because we have such a diversity of kids from different backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, different economic backgrounds. But it's also, you know, it's a strength, but we've got to hold that together. We've got to hold together the core of our school, and we also want to make sure everybody grows. We don't teach to the middle. A phrase that, you know, I heard a couple of times when I first got here was, hey, you know, we've got such a diversity of kids, you've got to teach to the middle. And that had just gone against how I had tried to teach. It just instinctually kind of shocked the system. So I really wanted to eradicate that phrase. And as Eli and Brooke know, I still have an allergic reaction if I hear anything like that. But I understand the challenge, right? It's really hard to have tiered instruction. It's really hard to teach this high-level curriculum to students who have learning disabilities. Like, I understand the challenge, but it's also, I think, you know, what we can achieve despite those challenges is really where the reward is. I don't want to detract too much, but alongside that challenge of keeping everybody K-12, and we do obviously have kids who do that. We have a lot of kids who do that, who stay here, is really that student growth. And, you know, that could be something we could talk about later too. But yeah. I said enough. I'll turn it back over.
Yeah. No, just to go off of that for a second. When I first got here in 2013, we had very few Title I's. We did not get Title I funding. Right. Like we did not really. And that, for those that don't know, that is free. Students get there's money from the state that from the government that comes for students who are below the poverty line. And so they get free and reduced lunch. And there's money to provide extra supports for those students. So we didn't get any of that when I got here in 2013. Now we're about 30% last time I looked at our numbers, which is substantial. growth. And even with that, and we are a highly, highly diverse school. Students are coming. When I got here, we had no students who were English language learners. Now we have about 20 in the 20s and who come here from other countries, and they don't speak English as their first language. And with those challenges, we have still maintained consistently high test scores on state standardized tests, and we have exceeded all expectations with regards to student growth. And that's really been, and that has been one of the really big selling points of our middle school, is that we do have, we do keep a culture of very high expectations here.
Does going with the classical approach change anything with standardized testing, since that's not, like, those pieces are not what other schools are doing? Does that change anything for how you guys do that part?
Because we're a public school, it does not, in the way we have to test what we have to test. However, I do feel like the skills that kids get out of our just baseline, awesomely rigorous classes is going to be helping them with test prep alongside the different things that we can bring in now. We'll have teachers that will help students prepare for tests now that they've gone more digital. And we're one of our kind of claims to fame is that we do more on paper, more with books, a little bit less with technology. So we've had to adapt. We've had to get carts on wheels and bring them into classrooms and help train our teachers to train our kids how to take these tests and give them those skills too. And I think the methodology of how to take tests gets built in a bit with how we do what we do with classical. Mm-hmm. And then students actually knowing how to think about things that are tricky, right? Like picking the best answer and how to think through, you know, qualitative thinking like that. And I'm really proud with how our kids have done. That's one of my hats too, is that I run some of the standardized testing. And we used to have in Arizona, I think, one big test and then maybe the language test for English language learners. Now we have five different state standardized tests that have to be given come April. And so it's, you know, it's a lot and it can feel like it takes over. But what we always try to do is put curriculum first, with bell-to-bell instruction, with some of the things we can do with the beauty of our curriculum. We do feel like then we can just fill in the margins a little bit with some, you know, good practices for test taking with our interventionists that have done an awesome job with groups. And then we can supplement that way.
Because we do not track. In other words, every student takes the same coursework. We don't have like one class for the kids that are high performing and another class for the kids that are a little slower. We believe everyone can access the same high level curriculum. That curriculum is here. And so the work of to hit the testing needs is more like, how do you translate our reading of To Kill a Mockingbird or of My Antonia or of Homer's Iliad into like answering these tests you're going to see on these questions you'll see on the SAT, right? So they're already being challenged, and they're already having to do a pretty heavy cognitive lift and seminar and in the math that they're asked to do. And really it's just a matter of just a little extra and showing them how to apply what they're doing in class to the test.
Okay. So I have two questions for the challenges. One that we'll kind of finish up that section to go into before we go into the next one. And I'll go and share both of them so you guys can think about answers for it. So I know you guys, obviously you're one, a public school. You're also then doing the classical approach, which is, I know, unique, but you're also a part of a bigger piece of body of schools of Great Hearts. And I love you kind of explain that when you answer the question, but I know you're a part of that. I would love to know, is that a challenge or is that actually easier? Cause I'm assuming they provide different services for you and softwares and different processes and systems that maybe, you know, a lot of our listeners are one person schools, whether private schools that are just, they figure all their own stuff out. The board decides things. And so there's complexities there, but maybe yours is super streamlined because it's like, hey, here's the model to follow. Yeah. So I'd love to chat about that piece from you guys. And then the last one of that challenge would be to talk about the voucher system in Arizona that we kind of hinted at before we started recording. And just if that's added some complexities and challenges for you guys.
Yeah, that's really, I'm glad because that really gets into some of the bits of our leadership team structure too. So like I say, Mrs. Stevens and I handle all of the day-to-day, really, of the middle and the high school. Mr. Poppleton does a lot of our interfacing with the network at large and with the lead office. So, Mr. Poppleton, if you could just speak into that question a little bit about what it's like to be part of the larger network.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're always going to have, and Greathearts has absolutely said this, you're always going to have some tension between the ground and then, you know, a network center or, you know, we call it the Phoenix home office. I would say for Chandler Prep, we're in a unique circumstance where we're one of the first Greathearts schools ever founded. I believe we're on our 18th year, which in charter school, you know, it's probably like four or five decades, like charter school years. But that is, you know, joking aside, that is a fairly older established, you know, it's a fairly older established school in the world of charter here in Arizona. And I would say before the pandemic, I saw more of a, you know, in some areas we had things, you know, we thought we had them figured out, and Greathearts was playing a little bit of catch up. So maybe it's a curriculum adjustment we've made to better, you know, prepare our students for standardized testing. That would be, you know, a random example where, you know, we've kind of figured this thing out with Euclidean geometry to prepare our kids for tests. We just supplement with a more, you know, modern geometry, and we spliced it and put it in the curriculum. Eventually, Greathearts had that project, you know, a couple of years, you know, a year or two later, built out. So there was this little bit of a lag because we had a number of teachers who had been doing this for so long, and we've had to figure out some things on our own. When the pandemic hit, I, you know, especially as a school leader, I felt so outmatched by some of the challenges. You know, do we wear masks? Do we not wear masks? Are we in person? How do we communicate this latest finding? You know, how do we navigate the political landscape? Those were all so beyond what I felt competent or capable of doing. And I felt like in those moments, we really leaned on Greathearts. And I think since then, Greathearts has really you know, grown and evolved. And there's always going to be some tension there between the ground and the people who aren't on the ground. But I think it's less than it used to be. At least from my perspective, as Greathearts kind of builds out. And there's still a lot of growth because Greathearts is becoming more of a national, you know, charter organization. And we have a private school that Greathearts runs here in Arizona now, thanks to the voucher system. They also advise other, you know, classical charters. So they're growing too, but I would say, you know, there was a moment, at least from my perspective, where Chandler Prep, in many ways, you know, in humility, you know, we were a little bit ahead of the curve because we had been around for so long. But I feel like now Greathearts is kind of setting that pace. And they're bringing value to our day. I was in a meeting this morning and we're looking at ways to get the message of our high school out to parents. And there's a number of, you know, resources at our fingertips that weren't there and they wouldn't be there. And I'm sure smaller schools, I think they have advantages, or like a single school versus something in a enterprise like Greathearts. They have the advantage of autonomy for the most part, although of course they have their board and they have that tension right there, depending on their setup. So it's I think simpler in some ways, and I could see some benefits, but I'm sure, especially here in Arizona, they're feeling the crunch of things like human resources, payroll, like all of those are real challenges. And, it looks like there's a little more red tape than there used to be in the state of Arizona to set up a charter, or it's harder to do now that there are more charters. I think, you know, at times like this, I think we're really blessed to have Greathearts involved the way they are.
Yeah. Can I speak into that just a little bit? So one of my hats as assistant headmaster is hiring recruitment of new talent. So I go through our big, so Greathearts has this huge hiring system, right? So there's like this big database that I log into and we have, you know, hundreds of, well, thousands really of applicants to sort through, you know. When I was right out of college, I worked private schools, you know, and that was rough. Like it was not really a living wage in Alaska that they were paying me at that time. And you hear on the news that teacher retention is a problem, teachers are leaving. And of course, the cost of living here in Phoenix has just really gone up a lot in the past couple of years. But because we're part of this like larger network, we can offer really, really competitive wages and benefits that, I mean, I have to admit, like I'm going to be having, my wife is having another baby here in the next couple of weeks. And I am so happy that I don't have to think for a second about how I'm going to pay for all the expenses that are coming down the pipeline, because I can make a good living here. And a lot of that is because of being part of this much larger organization where we can streamline a lot of our resources.
And to that point too, coaching teachers is a big part of what the three of us do. Mm-hmm. We all observe teachers. We have feedback meetings with teachers. All of our teachers have been observed. Some, I think on average 4 times. We've had 200 observations already in this year of our teachers. And I think that being able to do that for teachers can go a long way in teacher retention as well. And I think this year, I don't know if we would have done it that much, but Great Hearts made sure that was one of their focus points. They wanted to help us with a new rubric, a new way to have a dashboard for it, to be tracking how teachers are doing in different criteria that we have that we find important in our schools, no matter what the subject area is. So being able to do that for teachers with Great Hearts' push, it helped us to push in that direction, where so many times we get in the game of answering parent questions, helping students, helping parents, but then our teachers also needed that this year, and we were able to deliver on that.
Yeah, and Great Hearts got some grant money for that, right, Mr. John Paul? Yeah. I mean,
the rubric itself was part of a larger grant. Is that what you mean?
Yeah,
a little bit of coffee in my throat, so let me.
Yeah. So I mean, just the network was able to get this money to help really improve our teaching, like Mrs. Mm-hmm. Stevens said. And that would have been really hard to do. It's a smaller, like just us kind of an organization.
Does Great Hearts give you guys, each campus, their own freedom to make decisions to, like, obviously there's certain ones you can make, but if you're like, I want to teach this instead, like this curriculum, or I want to hire this new person, like they're letting you, or everything has to get worked up to Flagpole so it slows things down for you guys?
Interesting. We like to say local in many places. That's kind of our guideline. So the truth is, we do have a very specific curriculum. We are not able to just make curricular changes, and there's a process that we have to go through, and that does slow us down when it comes to curricular changes. That would be an example of something that takes a long time. I think a lot of us would be okay with that because we're a classical curriculum, right? If we weren't a classical curriculum, you might want those changes to happen a little more thoroughly. But if there are classical universities like St. John's and Santa Fe and Annapolis, their two campuses, where they have the same type of, you know, they have a process to change books. So that would be an example where things are really slow. We do have great support. If it's a hiring question, you know, I can get on the phone, and by the end of the day, I'll have somebody to talk to. So those on the ground kind of tactical decisions, we do get immediate backup on, but there are, like, if we wanted to change our logo, we couldn't really do that. If we want to change our charter, like our charter has the amount of days we need to be open every year for school. We can't just go to the charter board without Great Hearts and say, you know what, we want to add 2 more days. Although I don't know anybody else who wants to add more days. But, you know, that's an example where, you know, Great Hearts has said, look, we really don't want you to mess with your charter right now. If I really wanted to, I could get on the phone, make a case, they'd probably listen. But that would take a while. So we are very limited, but there's also, if you think about just cognitive workload, there's a number of things we don't have to worry about because it's taken care of.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah. So I think sometimes it makes us go faster and sometimes it slows us down.
Well, and they put people in the position like Mr. Poppleton, and he's our longest standing senior headmaster of a prep, I believe, in the Great Hearts Network. And we're so blessed to have had a headmaster who made it not only through the pandemic and the aftermath of all that, but he has just been now one of the senior headmasters that's counseling and coaching other headmasters as they're coming up. Sure. And so by having a program, I think, where Great Hearts has a leadership process and they put a lot of trust in their headmasters, they're able to turn over a lot of those, you know, on the ground decisions that come into play more with how to directly impact our families here in Chandler. And so I think that that's a good trust that goes both ways.
Hey, School Success Makers, just a really quick break to highlight one of our amazing sponsors, and that is ClassReach. Now, ClassReach supports schools of all sizes from application to graduation. Take charge of your school with ease, power, and mobility using ClassReach, the school management software administrators and teachers love using. You can get your free demo at ClassReach.com. That's ClassReach.com. They are amazing people, and they provide this amazing SIS software for you to keep track of your students' grades, communicating with families that are enrolled, and a whole bunch more. So again, check it all out on their website, ClassReach.com. They are awesome. All right, now back to the show. Well, let's talk real quick, guys. I want to make sure we don't get cut short on time. So if you could talk really quick about the voucher thing, just how that's affected you challenge-wise, and we'll jump into the next question.
Yeah, so the vouchers are a way in which students in Arizona can take the taxpayer money that the state of Arizona allocates for each kid and apply that money to a private school. Now, what's interesting here is that there are already so many charter schools, right? I mean, so it's not like there's some sort of like there hasn't been any competition, and then now all of a sudden there's all of this new competition. I think it more was that it's probably given the private schools more of a boost than it has hurt us, if that makes sense. Like, we're Great Hearts has roughly 22,000 students, I believe, in the Valley alone. A little Catholic school or Protestant school is going to have a hard time making a dent in that. I mean, just by virtue of size. That being said, Great Hearts has opened a Mr. Popham, do you want to talk about Christos a little bit?
They did open a very small non-denominational or Christian academy that vouchers can obviously be used for. There's two. They're much smaller, and I think they're always going to be smaller. So I think that was one way Great Hearts addressed, you know, the voucher legislation here. We got to talk a little bit about this with you before the podcast. I feel like in Chandler Prep's immediate circumstance, we haven't seen a real impact from vouchers. I think our competition's more other charters or, you know, better funded. The schools down the road that are district schools, they are better funded than we are. So they have a little bit of an advantage when it comes to, you know, athletics and some electives that they can offer. They just have better, they have a better funding formula. But for vouchers here specifically for Chandler Prep and even the other preps, we haven't seen, my colleagues haven't seen, you know, the potential hit that we thought we would see. I think a lot of those families that are already inclined in that direction, you know, are already homeschooling or in a smaller school, and who knows, it could change. But I think there's something to be said about, you know, a school of our size, 700 plus students. There's something about that environment that's really good for kids. And you obviously could have a private school with that same size environment with the voucher. But, you know, I think there's a need that we at Chandler Prep meet that's going to be around as long as schools are around. And
something is, I mean, the students that we lost last year to private schools where they were able to use vouchers are just anecdotally, they would have left anyway. Like, I mean, so I didn't feel like they were being like drawn off because there was this new thing. They were already like really not fitting with the kind of culture that we wanted to have here. One of the things that's interesting about us is that we are, John Paul used to talk, well, I haven't heard you say this recently, about us being kind of in our adolescence as a school. And I think we're still there in a way. We're kind of insofar as like when you open a school, and when I came here in 2013, we were still kind of in that news, and Mrs. Stevens too, because you were here in what, 2011?
I think, right? 2011 was
2011,
my first
right? We were still a young school. We had that core group of families who like were just completely committed to the vision. Mm-hmm. They're completely committed to what we were doing here. They weren't going to leave anyway, any reason, no way. Like they were just committed to this, the mission to cultivate the hearts and minds of students to the pursuit of truth, beauty, and goodness. Now that we're a medium-sized school, it's changed because we have families now who want options. They want the bells and whistles. They want, this is why I said before the podcast started, our enrichment courses, right? We're like really trying to build out those enrichment courses. It's partly a retention thing, right? Like we want students to have robotics, which is what we're starting a robotics enrichment course this year. We're starting a archery enrichment course this year, which has actually been really successful at one of our sister schools. So like we should have it too. And then we're really restarting the math competition. We had it going very strong before the pandemic, and the pandemic killed it. So we're trying to resuscitate it. But like those choices and having this like menu of stuff, like you know, facilities, athletics, clubs, electives, you know, so you, when you're a medium-sized school, there's a lot more demand for that kind of a thing. And we can offer a good bit of it, but like the little Christian school down the road is not going to be able to compete with us on those things, usually.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, and you had a perfect segue there, Eli, for like what's going good, because you already started mentioning all those things you guys are working on. So as we kind of transition to that last main section of like, we don't have to spend a ton of time here because I want to make sure I'm respectful of all you guys' time on the podcast. But like, what's some quick highlights of what's going good? You already kind of mentioned the ones you just did, but what else are some things that are going good?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I wanted to say with respect to what's going really well is just this leadership team is this. This is not a one man operation to run this ship. And I joined the team, what was it, John Paul, 2017. I came on board as the academic dean, right? So I was academic dean of high school. I'd been humane letters and lit comp teacher for years before that. And then I was the testing coordinator then. Mrs. Stevens has graciously taken that burden off my back. I did it for 5 years, and it was I got to take that Sisyphus rock, you know, and sort of Mrs. Stevens is now holding that up. But it's been incredible for me to see the way in which John Paul has really mentored and grown this team, so that there really is, I think, a special bond between the three of us that, you know, has gotten us through the pandemic, you know, in one piece, and retain all three of us. We're here through the whole thing. That killed a lot of administrators, because it was such a Herculean task. And I remember when I first joined the leadership team, Mr. Poblin gave me this book. And I think I may have said some disparaging words. It was the Ideal Team Player by Lencioni. And I'm like, what is this? This is a business book. I need Homer and Shakespeare. Why are you giving me something? And in the book, he talks about if you want to run an agile, high-performing organization that has to operate in a competitive environment, you need to hire team players that are humble, hungry, and smart. And at first I thought, okay, that sounds cool. But as I've been on the leadership team for, you know, 7 years now, it's just shown itself to be more and more true. So I wonder if Mr. Poppleton could just talk a little bit more about really how he's mentored us and this team and kind of how we've gotten to this sort of stride that I think we're in right now. where we're operating at a pretty high level and up against some pretty big challenges.
Yeah, thank you, Eli. I'm just really humbled to hear you articulate it that way, Eli. And Eli and Brooke, no, there's no way I could do it without them. So you guys are humble, hungry, and smart. And the smart is, you know, people smarts. One thing we, and I think that was a book Great Arts gave me too, so I can't take the full credit there. But what we realized over time, and our team didn't always function in a functional way. Like we had some dysfunction built in, you know, that I'll take credit for. It took me time to learn how to communicate better. You know, over time, we just kept the same goal. You know, we've had tons of meetings, and I don't think they were wasted, but they were painful as we tried to get on the same page. And if we weren't on the same page for something, we would sit there and, you know, debate that. And I think what I tried to develop and you know, with my team is let's try to have a nimble ego. You can't make it without an ego. Your ego is important. At the same time, you know, you also want to make room. I feel like I've bought into a lot of this, you know, idea of even going back to Stephen Covey, this idea of synthesis. Like, we are greater than some of our parts. You know, when we're really working together, I can come up with an okay solution by myself, hopefully. But when I've got a great team and they see things from different points of view, like, we can really work on a good solution. And over time, with some help from Great Arts, we were able to, I think, just to strengthen our core as a team. Each year has been a little better. And Eli's been a healthy skeptic. Like, I tended to think, wow, I've got such a great team. Everything's going great. And then every year, like, the rug would get pulled out from underneath me. Like, what just happened, right? And Eli was kind of, you know, really good at keeping me grounded. We take surveys about how well teamwork's going this year. And I think, I don't know, they're anonymous, but I feel like Eli's the one who was always a little more honest than I was. Eli is bringing us down again. But the truth is, he was bringing us up because he was saying, no, this is still dysfunctional. Right? So when he says we're communicating better, I know that's true. And the same thing with Brooke. She's very honest. We definitely don't, you know, disagree. We don't agree on everything. So that leads to, I think, better solutions, right? And if I could hope for anything for other schools, it's, you know, obviously finding incredible teammates that I have, which I'm very thankful for, and I don't think is the norm. But keeping that core together, finding a way, like, I think there's so much turnover in education, and obviously turnover can be good, but I think there's probably just a little too much of that. So you want to find ways to grow because you're in similar positions, but the fact that we've all been on the same team for so long has enabled us to communicate better, problem solve better. You know, there's this thing also by Lencioni, working genius. I'll plug that. It's I don't know if you're familiar with it, Mitchell. But yeah, it's
with the test.
Yeah. So we, that helped us too, because all of a sudden that all of our world just made more sense. It was like, it went from black and white to color, and I'm WI, which makes it really hard on people who aren't, right? Wonder and inventive, right? So I'll sit in a room and wonder and problem solve for hours. I'll go home feeling great. And then the people who are more tenacity driven are ready to throw me, you know, off a cliff, right? So I'm like Brooke. So we're able to speak that language, like.
And I'm the discerner, so I'm like, wait, guys, what is going on here? Like, I don't.
Eli, what is your discernment and wonder, Eli?
Yeah, wonder and discernment. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we learned what each other. We learned what that was, and I'm not even a huge fan of these kind of inventories, and I know Eli's less of a fan of that, you know, than I am. But you know, Mrs. Stevens is able to say, I am doing 100 million things right now. I don't really have the capacity to wonder and invent right now. Right. And then I'm able to hear that. Okay. I'm going to go back in, you know, work on some email. And then 2 days later, I'm going to come back to you and say, you know, even this morning, I threw a curveball at her. She's actually having to substitute teach today, and she's doing it for, you know, the near term. And I said, well, what if we do a 0 hour? I heard our office manager said, well, what if we start a 0 hour with these 14 students? I probably shouldn't have said that, Brooke, so I apologize because I know you were
the
running.
My camera wasn't working for the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. So she's, but I, you know, that's not, there are often times where I will, you know, we'll make sure the meeting's tactical. We'll make sure we don't stay up in the clouds because I know now that I'm, you know, done this for a little bit longer, I know the effect that is on my team, right? So you learn how to work better with time and effort. And yeah, we've got a really good thing going on. And I hope other schools can find that, right? I hope other schools can find that longevity. At the same time, you don't want to get stagnant, right? Luckily, the challenges we face make that impossible right now. So, but it's good to taste a little bit of the success, right? We haven't really focused on that as much as we maybe could have. But as Eli said, we're seeing a lot of things, you know, break our way. We're in this adolescent phase. I think our goal is to become a mature school, a school that's going to last decades, that's going to have traditions that last decades, that families send multiple generations to. Like, that's obviously the goal. And in the world of charter, I think that is very ambitious and it's a noble goal. So that once we hit that stage, I feel like our work here, or at least my work here, will be accomplished, right? Once we're able to move from this adolescent phase, which is good, and it's like teaching an eighth grader, right? Like, we've got a lot of capability, but we need to learn how to channel that a little better. And I think we're getting, you know, this year we feel like we're a step closer. Doesn't mean it's easy, but we're seeing some more of the rewards. We're seeing, like, our growth scores from the past few years. We're seeing a lot of joy on campus. We're seeing great instruction. Like, there's just a lot of things after, you know, spending time in the trenches of building this leadership core. Some things are finally breaking our way, and you feel a little bit of that wind in your sail, and that goes a long way because, as we know, you know, this work is not easy.
You can sing the sea shanty later.
I was going to just piggybacking on that. Our kids are happy, and we had a really strong start to the year. We did two early on in the year high school retreats, just getting our kids outside, getting them together, getting them happy. I mean, we are here just to try to help our students have a good life ahead for themselves. And we just can't forget that perspective, that mission, right? It's about the students. And so seeing the students be happy this year at the start of the year, and they're not happy because we're just letting them do what they want. We're keeping the bar really high, but bringing them along in community, that's one of our themes this year, strengthening learners through community. And I just really think with a team modeling that, how we three are, and then that spreading through our faculty and then to our kids, there's just no better feeling than if we can continue pulling this off this year, because it started really well.
That's awesome. Well, John Paul, I'm a WI as well, so you just get us both in the room. It's going to be idea, 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 and then everybody else, you get it done. You get it done. You know? That's my team gets that all the time. My COO, I was meeting with yesterday, and we were at Starbucks, and we're talking, and I was like, hey, what's a better way I can help you? And she's just like, well, you have a lot of ideas, Mitchell. I was like, I know that was coming. So yeah, I feel you, brother.
Yeah.
Well, guys, as we wrap up, I have this final question I ask everybody. This is one for both. Each of you will answer this one individually. It's just share a piece of advice that you would share with the other school leaders listening. We got charter school listeners. We got Christian school listeners. But school leaders listening, if you were to share one piece of advice for those school leaders that are listening, what would that one piece of advice be?
Yeah, just I think when you're hiring and when you're forming your team is just to form a team that vision needs to come first. I mean, I think that we are looking to cultivate the hearts and minds of students in the pursuit of truth, beauty, and goodness. Then here at Trandler Prep, we also have what we kind of call it a submission statement, to challenge and encourage and invite all students to learn as a way of life. You know, and if teachers are not committed to the classical liberal arts mission and doing that for everybody, that special ed from English language learners, everybody that comes through our doors, then they're not going to be a good fit here. Mm-hmm. So we really, if we're just hiring some sort of high performer genius who's not committed to the vision, it's not going to go well, and it's going to cause more problems in the long run. So that's certainly something I've learned since having been on this team, which I would offer to anyone.
Mine would be to just pay attention to teachers. it can get kind of lost sometimes in the minutia of the day and the week, but teachers are, especially if they've been teaching longer than 4 years, they're hurting. And, you know, and I think just having a listening ear for teachers and what they're going through, it's not always about having the perfect solution. You can't always bend to things, but just being there for teachers, I think, has been something on my mind that's helped keep CPA strong.
Yeah, I would say for school leaders, communication, maybe it was because it was a weakness of mine, I think, communication is so important. You could have great ideas, you could have a great team, but spending that extra 5 to 10% of your time making sure people know why it is you're doing something, I think listening first is a great skill to develop. It's been a challenge for me, but I've really intentionally worked on that. And that's going to help, that helps you articulate your answer better or come up with a better solution. So I would just add that, and then surround yourself with great people, and lean on your colleagues for the right things, be humble and, be upfront with what you bring to the table. And once we're honest with ourselves and each other, we can just accomplish a lot more. So I think truth at the center of what we do is essential, to long-term success for ourselves and for each other.
Yeah. Love it, man. You guys, I think we crushed it here. So, it's gotten the world record for the longest school success podcast we've ever had. So we have the first trio interview and the longest one. So I'm loving it. It's been awesome, guys. I love what you're doing. I'm sure Eli, you might get some emails now from people going, I want to work at Chandler Prep. And so maybe you'll get some more, people looking to move to Arizona.
Reach out to me on LinkedIn, you know. Mm-hmm.
There you go. All right. So go find out Eli on LinkedIn. Guys, thank you for what you're doing. From me to you, just thank you for pouring into the students for all these years that you've been doing that. This is why one of the reasons we started the podcast to begin with was just to have hopefully another resource to help teachers grow and get better and learn from each other, learn from others. So I love what you guys are doing. If I'm over in Arizona in that area, I would love to come by and see the school and meet you guys in person, because yeah. I love what you guys are doing. So keep up the good work, and thanks for being on the podcast.
Great. Today. We'd love to have you.
Thanks for what you're doing too.
Thank you, Mitchell.
Well, another huge shout out and a thank you to John, Brooke, and Eli for taking time and being on the podcast today. I loved the interview with three people at one time. It was interesting but different, and it was super duper fun because everybody could feed off of each other. So as always, I'm hoping you guys were able to get at least one thing from today's episode that you can take back to your school to make it better than it is right now. Now, we have some great resources for you, so please make sure you're taking advantage of all of those. First one, join our private Facebook community. It's just for school leaders, called School Success Makers. I'm personally in there, and I'd love to see you in there as well. We also have the School Success Report on our website, schoolsuccessmakers.com. Go sign up for that. That's going to come out weekly, and we want you guys to make sure you're up to date with things happening in the education space. We're going to do some really fun things with that School Success Report, so make sure you don't miss it. Sign up for it. It's completely free. I want to make sure you're getting these resources, because we got some great ones. We got the free private community. We got the School Success Report. We have the podcast. So make sure you're always pouring into yourself, making yourself better than you were yesterday, just like we're trying to do the same thing for schools in that area. And if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, ideas, or anything that we can do to make the podcast better or our community better, let us know. You can fill out one of the forms on our website on schoolsuccessmakers.com and let us know. And as always, guys, we're going to be here next week with another amazing episode as usual on the School Success Podcast. We'll see you then.